The Monty Show! Happy Monday!
Don't lie.
What? It's a great day. I mean, I'm confused. Whatever could you mean, Jake?
Right.
The Cubs lost and they didn't win the division. I mean, I've known this for weeks and months, right?
Yes.
I told you this.
You're the great all-knowing Uncle Monty on the show.
Yep. Well hung, too. It is Monday, October 1st. Jake brought home a sixer of donuts, and I may be on a sugar high right now. We've got to talk a lot of NFL today. We got to talk about the Cubs.
No.
We got to talk about LeBron frickin' James. He's a Los Angeles Laker.
Of Anaheim.
That was weird yesterday, right here in the great city of Los Angeles, California. LeBron's going to be a star. We'll talk all about that. There was one NBA guy, the great Tripper, which is a big hint for all you Duke fans.
Duke, it's Duke.
Who I thought had the best Coach weekend K. in the NBA, so we'll talk about that. Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. That's where you also find us online, themontyshow.com. And wherever you get your podcast, just search The Monty Show. Where do you want to start? Should we get the Cubs shellacking out of the way?
Yeah, let's get the negativity out of the way, because it's only Monday, and we really need to get all the way to Friday, and tomorrow's going to be very negative as well, so let's just get it out of the way now.
Well, I do appreciate you trying to smooth over the waters of the Brewers' victory today by bringing home a dozen donuts.
Yeah.
That was well done.
Yeah.
But I do also want you to know that doesn't get over the fact that I was right and you were wrong. What else is new? That the Milwaukee Brewers are the 2018 National League Central Division champions.
Do you hear that? Do you hear that?
What's that?
Wait, small violin.
Yeah.
Small violin.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Jerk. The point is, I've been saying this for 2-3 months, that Theo Epstein had, I think, one of the worst off seasons that I can remember in recent history. For a championship caliber club, he got everything wrong in the off season. Whether it is Wade Davis not here anymore. By the way, you know he's coming to town because he's the closer for the Rockies and he's had a great season. Brandon Morrow, how'd that bicep do? Oh, that's right. You can't lift. I forgot. Your bicep's broken. Yu Darvish, I think he's dead. And Tyler Chatwood. You know, like, the funny thing is,
dead.
You know, like, here's the funny part. Yu Darvish is a guy that is hurt, and you're like, oh, okay, fine. That's great. Tyler Chatwood's a guy you're like, oh, he's healthy? Bummer. Wish he was hurt. Like, the guys, you can't even get that right. Tyler Chatwood is abysmal. One of the worst signings in Chicago Cub history.
Yeah.
Oh, is that Yu Darvish or Tyler Chatwood? How about both? Brandon Morrow, complete flop. Joe Maddon being, cutesy, cool, hip manager guy who lets Pedro Strop bat when he clearly should have pinch hit for him and didn't. Or, I know, maybe tell him don't try to beat out a base hit like every other pitcher in the major leagues. You just trot down the first base. Because when he did, he pulled a hamstring and wasn't available to pitch for the last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
It's endless, the mistakes that this team has made. And if it's not Chris Bryant needing shoulder surgery by most people's guesses, look at the Addison Russell situation. Clearly, completely botched it. Because now, right when you need defense, and sure, Javier Baez slid over to shortstop and everything's fine, right? But now, when you really need it, Addison Russell, who should have probably been suspended much earlier in the year based on the allegations that have come out now, you know, now in the middle of a pennant race, Russell gets suspended, and it's a huge distraction that Joe Maddon was still talking about on Saturday at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
It's just this whole calamity of errors, and you have, I think, the worst pitching staff of the playoff teams. You watched today as the LA Dodgers easily dispatched of the Colorado Rockies. Oh, now Kyle Freeland's going to come pitch at Wrigley Field tomorrow, where he's pitched really well. And the only guy who's actually hitting for the Cubs right now, Anthony Rizzo, is hitting .166 against Freeland. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. My brother called me today, that dirty White Sox fan, and I didn't even want to talk about it with him. You know, because you know that this is a complete flop by the Cubs. It's one of the worst collapses, I think, in Chicago sports history, frankly.
Yeah, it's not been good. Obviously, it's not been good, and I think you're right. I mean, it did start just at the beginning of the year. I mean, so often we see that typically these problems start to come out in the middle of the year. You've been saying this for a long time, and you saw it, but I just chose not to look at it that way. And I think now you can say that Theo's mistakes have really come back to get them as a team. You know, the Yu Darvish thing, Yu Darvish versus Jake Arrieta. I think this year you would have rather had Jake Arrieta. Now, for the future, I don't know. It depends what Darvish does. But I can tell you right now, Arrieta showed you what he can do. So,
but look at Jason Hayward's contract.
Yeah.
$26 million for 8 years. One of the worst contracts in baseball right now. Because that guy's still not hitting. And Yu Darvish making $25 million. Tyler Chatwood gets 3 years. Three-year deal. For $12.5 million, you are married to him for two more seasons. What are you going to do with that guy besides pay him not to pitch? Yeah. I have no idea what to do with him. You know, Brandon Morrow is a two-year deal for $21 million. Jose Quintana, who has been just freaking average, is a terrible trade. I don't know what you do with this. There's no fixing this. Because now you can forget Bryce Harper because you got to go find an ace.
Yeah.
You have to find somebody that can pitch in the realm of John Lester, who's not getting any younger and only has 2 years left on his deal, who you're thrilled to pay $27.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, John Lester's not the issue here. I think overall you're right. I think for Theo, he's always been a guy that can go out and get position players and build a lineup and you can be sound all the way through there, but the pitching has always been his issue. And I don't know that we're talking about firing Theo or getting rid of. That's not really the conversation we're having. It's more about the fact that he needs to improve in this area. We always talk about Tyler Chatwood's got to throw more strikes. Well, Theo Epstein's got to find better pitchers. I mean, it's that simple.
Well, and here's the real disaster in this. Now to get that pitching, you're going to have to trade one of your club control guys. You're probably going to have to trade the Ian Happs of the world, which I'm fine with. He's making $570,000. You're probably going to have to trade Kyle Schwarber, who's making $604,000. You have one of the best players in baseball, and Javier Baez, making $657,000. Those luxuries are all gone now.
Yeah.
Because you screwed up so badly with Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood and Brandon Morrow and Jason Hayward. The list is amazing. The mistakes that Theo Epstein's made over the last two seasons, 2017 and 2018, have really been not his finest hour. And I dare say if it was anybody else who didn't have the cachet and the mystique of a Theo Epstein, that we'd be talking about, hey, maybe it's time to make a change here. Hey, you know, if it's not Joe Maddon and his cool set of T-shirts, you know, maybe it's time to make a change with the way he's overused Cishek, with the way that Pedro Strop wound up getting hurt, with, I mean, just the way he uses the bullpen in general. But we're not, because, you know, Theo does have mystique, and Joe Maddon does have an awesome set of T-shirts. In 2016, and this drives me crazy, 2016 kind of you bought these guys time. And I just don't get that concept, because you're not going to keep winning. And sooner or later, it's all going to come back to roost, because you have a guy in Ben Zobrist who I don't think should be on the team next year. He's not the same capable player that he was. I look at somebody like Anthony Rizzo, who's signed through next year. He's only making $7 million.
Yeah.
You're going to have to extend him. You're going to have to pay guys like Javier Baez, who he's making $657,000.
Yeah.
He should probably be making that a month,
yeah,
not a season.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is eating up these arbitration years on all of these guys. You're wasting them every year.
Yep.
Because you should be the best team in the National League by 10 games every single year because of your payroll. Yet what are the Dodgers doing? The Dodgers are getting Walker Buehler with a sensational start today. And Bellinger hitting bombs and Muncy hitting bombs to get them the NL West crown, where they'll be staying home and, you know, should they win, you know, they just did it the right way.
Yeah, and I think the Cubs were doing it the right way until they weren't, and you made mistakes. And now, again, I don't think you can ever project the damage that's caused by things you did 2 years ago. Because you just never know how far the rabbit hole goes with that. So, you know, you overpaid Darvish, so now you're out of money to get new pitching, which means you got to trade Schwarber or Ian Happ.
That's not the problem. You're out of money because you overpaid Darvish and Hayward and Chatwood, and so now there's not a real significant chance you can take a run at Bryce Harper because you got to go and overpay for a pitcher who's probably not going to be good. That's the conversation. Because let's say it's Noah Syndergaard, who the Mets are known to be wanting to trade. What's the first thing I say to you when I say, would you want Noah Syndergaard?
Well, yeah, if you're going to give me talent.
Well, let me look at his elbow first and his shoulder first, because what's he got the last 2 years? Arm issues. So you can't afford to make that mistake because you already made that mistake and you're going to double down on that mistake with Syndergaard. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have room to make these mistakes. Like, how did you had Chapman and you had Wade Davis, and they are both gone.
Yeah. I don't.
How does that happen?
Yeah, the Yankees clearly won the Chapman deal. There's no question.
Right. But then why would you let Wade Davis go? Why? Because now you have Morrow, who's not available to you.
Yeah, you don't have Morrow. That's the tough part.
This is my point. And you're stuck with Drew Smyly today, pitching in a one-game playoff to win the Central. You're stuck with Jaime Garcia. You're stuck with all these guys, and you're like, well, I better pitch Jaime Garcia because, I can't pitch Carl Edwards Jr. because I don't trust him. That's where they are. It is what it is. Now, here's the interesting thing. Reality is they probably beat the Rockies, even though they're throwing Freeland, who's a lefty, and he's going to give the Cubs hell. And the Cubs won't get a hit for the first two times through the order like they did today. And they'll struggle. But what happens if they beat the Rockies tomorrow? Oh, that's right. They go back to Milwaukee for the division series. And who's got the home field advantage in that? Oh, Milwaukee does. And Yelich is probably the MVP. You know, but you're getting beat by a team that, let's be honest, is pretty average. They're not an elite. The Brewers are not an elite team. The American League is by far, is favored by far to win the World Series.
They should be, yeah.
The Brewers have almost no shot to win the World Series. I don't think they're better than the Braves. I don't think they're better than the Dodgers. You know, like, and it depends. Do the Dodgers pitch? I don't know. I have no idea what the Dodgers will look like.
The Dodgers are hot going into it, and I think the Dodgers are going to be a force. I would agree that the Brewers are on the lower end of the postseason teams in the NL at this point. But I think even if the Cubs win tomorrow, it's delaying the inevitable, which is you're not going to the World Series. This was not the year for you.
I actually hope they lose tomorrow.
That would be best for the team.
I'm not being bitter Cub fan, but I have no interest in winning a playoff game to lose a playoff series to not win the World Series. I'd rather get the rebuild underway. Does that make sense?
Yes, like, absolutely.
I don't want to sit around and you know, I just don't want to wait. You know, because you're going to go to Milwaukee and you're probably better than Zach Davies and Wade Miley and Gio Gonzalez, who the Nationals didn't want anymore. And, you know, Yuli Chacin today was pretty average. Pitched okay. Pitched pretty well. Rizzo got him for one home run.
Yeah.
But once they started working their at-bats, and this is another symptom that the Cubs are freaking frustrating, because you fired, you know, Dave Miley, your hitting coach, because, you know, the average was too low and the OPS was too low. And you bring in Chili Davis, and what happens to the Cubs? The average goes up 10 points. The OPS goes down 30 points.
Yeah.
They lost 30 points on their OPS. So you have terrible at-bats. And then you'll have one or two rounds of good at-bats. But you won't get that for six straight hitters. So you'll leave two on with nobody out. You'll leave those two guys on base.
Yeah.
Because we're obsessed with playing Ben Zobrist. Because Ben's got to play every day. And I'm not sure why. But he has to play every single day. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's frustrating to me. Anyway, I could go on. I sincerely say that I hope the Cubs lose tomorrow and they don't go on to play Milwaukee. Because there's really no upside. The Cubs are not a World Series caliber team. So start retooling now.
Yeah.
Start making those moves. That's what I would say.
100%. So. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Again, you're delaying the inevitable. You're going to lose. You're not going to the World Series either way. So do you want to lose to the Brewers again, or do you want to just get it over tomorrow with the Rockies?
Yeah. I mean, Murphy, Zobrist, Schwarber. I mean, those guys probably are not on this team next year, or probably shouldn't be on this team next year, because you're going to have to trade Kyle Schwarber, and now he's got this bad back that's probably going to limit him. Caratini's not a good backup catcher. Tommy La Stella, all he is a pinch hitter. He can't play the field regularly because he can't hit regularly. I don't know what David Bodie is. Terrence Gore is a guy who runs. That's it. And Ian Happ doesn't have a position because he's not a very good outfielder and he's not good enough to play second base. You know, like Daniel Murphy, everybody's got this just absolute love of Murphy. And all I'm saying is, if Daniel Murphy's your second baseman next year, you're not good enough.
Okay, who do you want to be the second baseman?
It's probably somebody who's not here right now. Because I don't love Ian Happ, but he's not probably good enough to play second base every day.
So what is it about Murphy you don't like?
He's just he's not capable physically anymore. He can't run. He's a guy who I don't know what his offseason looks like. Is he going to have more knee surgery? I have no idea. But he's not a fast runner at all. He does not have great range at second base.
Yeah.
He's still a professional hitter, but he doesn't have great range.
I mean, look, I think Murphy brings you value. I agree he doesn't have the range he once did. But that doesn't mean he's not a solid choice for second base. Professional at-bats and leadership. That's the value.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you can't have Murphy and Zobrist on the team.
No, I would agree with that, for sure. 100% would agree with that. But I think at this point, I'd rather have Murphy than Zobrist. Like,
yeah. You know. You can't have Mike Montgomery as your fifth starter. If it's Quintana, Lester, Hendricks, and Hamill, okay, you can live with that. But you better had found a Syndergaard. You had better have found a top-of-the-rotation guy.
I would say that they should go out and get DeGrom and sign him long-term. That's what I would try to do. But and if that's not going to happen...
Committed, I believe he's committed to the Mets, isn't he? They would have to trade him. And at this point, if you didn't trade him at the deadline when he had a ton of value, why would you trade him now?
Yeah. I don't know. Those guys are always for sale. It's just a matter of getting the deal done, in my opinion. I think... Anytime you got a guy of that value and you're not a good team, you're not a winning team right now, those guys are always for sale. It's just the price.
Yeah. Hey, look, I I would love to agree with you. I don't think they're for sale. I really don't. I mean, I think I would love to say that they're regularly available. Top of the rotation pitching is almost never available. It's really hard. And again, this goes back to, and I don't mean to be redundant because I say this 1,000 frickin' times, you can't keep buying your pitching.
But they're also not in a place to bring anybody up either. That's the problem. The farm system is depleted at this point. You've used those guys now.
Yeah.
So they're not in a place to, they're in a place to where they can only buy pitching. That's their number one option, their only option really. Or you can go out and try to make a deal with the Padres, let's say, or try, like, you can make deals to bring younger guys back into your system and keep them.
Yeah, Jacob DeGrom is arbitration eligible the next 2 years. So, as is Syndergaard. So, you know, I'd love to tell you that those guys are available, but it's really hard to get those guys. It is really hard to get those guys. And that's what this Cub team needs. You need a legitimate... number one starting pitcher, because you're just going to write off Yu Darvish. You just have to come to terms with that.
Yeah.
That until he shows he can pitch every fifth day and his arm's not falling off, it scares me to death he didn't have Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, add that to the list of mistakes.
Yeah. This sets up as the contract where you don't see the guy for 3 years.
Yeah.
And you almost forget that he's on the team, but he's collecting $25 million a season.
And you're just like, wow, why didn't they go out and get him? They've got the money. Oh, but they don't.
And not, again, I hate to keep saying I told you so, but when they signed Yu Darvish, I told you this was a mistake. I told everybody, you should have brought Jake Arrieta back. He's sitting out there. Nobody's signing Arrieta.
I could be wrong, but didn't he want to come back too?
Yes.
Right? He was about it.
And when they signed Yu Darvish, they went to Arrieta and said, hey, take it or leave it, because we've got Yu Darvish on a verbal agreement. And he said, leave it. And so they left it. And he wound up in Philadelphia. And he had a better year. And I don't have any idea what his numbers are.
He had a better year.
You know how I know he had a better year?
Yeah.
Because Yu Darvish made 8 starts. That's how I know Jake Arrieta had a better year. I don't care what his numbers are. Jake Arrieta pitched. And he pitched pretty well for Philadelphia, by the way.
He did, yeah.
So frustrating. It is that you're struggling to beat Chacin today. That you collapsed. I think it was September 5th. The Brewers were 5 games back in the division. And they won the division.
Yeah.
And you can tell me that they got hot and, oh, they played this and they're pitching and Yelich and... This is all about the Cubs.
100%. Yeah.
Anyway. Who wins the World Series?
The Astros.
Who's the best team in the National League right now?
The Astros. The Dodgers, I would guess. I'd probably say the Dodgers.
Again, something I've said all year. I think the Dodgers are until they're not.
Yeah.
Until you knock them out.
I think if you're the Dodgers, there's not a better way to go into the postseason, in my opinion. Going in on a high, you're feeling good. You know, you've got guys like Bellinger hitting bombs today, and that was a bomb.
Max Muncy is one of the best stories in baseball who's getting overshadowed a little bit.
But they're that team that have that guy, right? Like, the Cubs had that in Schwarber a couple years ago. Like, every good team that's going to go deep in the postseason has that guy that wasn't supposed to be there that is.
I really feel like Kyle Schwarber's flatlined, and I don't know how to justify that statement. But the greatness of Schwarber, I'm not going to say it's dead, and very clearly he's got a back injury, and he's not swinging the bat incredibly well. But all we heard about all offseason is, oh, man, this is amazing. And
well, it was.
He lost all this weight, and he worked out, and look at this lean chicken breast he's eating, and oh my God, is that 93.7 ground turkey in his refrigerator? It turned out it was. And yeah, he hit 26 home runs and played in 136 games and only had 61 RBIs, mainly because everybody else around him decided not to get on base ever. And he hit .239. OPS 826, which is really pedestrian for a power hitter. I don't know how much value he has. Now, if you're the New York Yankees, he's got a ton of value. Oh, that's right. You have Stanton and Judge, so you really kind of don't need him. You broke the Major League home run record this year, so you really, really don't need him. So I don't think there's a huge trade market out there for a guy who's a very average, much improved, but very average outfielder. He doesn't catch. And he's not agile enough to play first base. So he's, what, an American League DH? But who's got pitching to trade for this guy who's under club control? Who's only, what did I say, making $600,000? Hey, that's awesome. I don't know who's going to make that deal for a guy who, in 1,200 plate appearances, has hit 72 home runs. So the guy can rake, and he can hit a ton of home runs. And when he's healthy, he's probably a 40-home run guy every year.
I love that about baseball. You got 1,200 chances. You hit 72 bombs. You're a great hitter.
but seriously, I could go on. Know? We've gone on too long on the Cubs. I'm sure everybody has flipped away or fast-forwarded or whatever the hell you do with a podcast. The point is, I'm incredibly frustrated with this team. It is really disappointing that they're not better. That they're not better. That's just where I'll leave it. You know? It's not as embarrassing as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yesterday. Close. But not quite as embarrassing as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers yesterday. Let's talk the National Football League. How about the Bears trouncing the Bucs yesterday? And in the NFL, our locks this week, page at 50-50, we were 2-2. Bumped up the percentage, though, because now we're 7-15 on the season. We lost the Bucs game in a big way because the Bears won 48-10. The quarterbacks are the conversation in this game. First with the good for the Bears. Mitchell Trubisky, I think, threw 37 touchdowns yesterday.
Yeah, he's the MVP of the league, and he's better than Aaron Rodgers now. So
I think it's an NFL record, 37 touchdowns in one game.
Yes, yes. For sure a Hall of Fame lock now.
Do you buy what you saw out of Trubisky yesterday?
Not even a little bit. I don't think Trubisky is that guy every single week. And he hasn't been that guy. I think he could be that guy long term, but he needs to prove it. Like, go out and do it every week. I'm not saying you got to put up 48 or whatever it was every week, but it's just not the performance he gives us every week. Every week, what he does is he has a very average performance where he makes throws that he shouldn't necessarily make. I just don't love him as a quarterback. I think what happened yesterday is that Tampa had an awful week. Their defense was awful. The offense was awful. Dirk Cutter should be fired. There's no question about it in my mind.
He said after the game, we should all be fired, including me.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely garbage. I don't know how Jameis Winston stepped on that field yesterday. I really don't understand that.
It was a terrible first half, and I don't think it was Ryan Fitzpatrick's fault. The offensive line did not protect him. He was running for his life. He got hit several times. I mean, it was just a really awful first half for Tampa. And you look at his numbers, 9 of 18 for 126 yards and an interception. And you're like, wow, that's pretty not good. But you also only had 60 yards of rushing the entire day.
Yeah.
And if you look at the numbers by team, the Bears scored 28 points and racked up 483 yards on 58 plays. Tampa scored 16 points, 60 plays, only 311 yards of offense.
Yeah.
They had the ball the exact same amount of times. Now, is the Bears defense elite? Sure it is. And I was listening to The Score in Chicago this morning. They have Lance Briggs, the former Bear linebacker, the legend. And he made a really good point. The Bears defense is now completely different. Khalil Mack plays with swagger, and everybody feeds off that. Everybody plays with a little more swagger. How is the secondary able to cover like that yesterday without Prince Amukamara? Well, because everybody believes.
Yeah.
And you have Akeem Hicks throwing his shoulder pads into the stands, and they didn't miss a beat when he got ejected. Like, it's amazing to me. And if you look at the numbers in this game, Trubisky, 354 yards, 6 touchdowns, 154.6 rating. He also ran for 53 yards. Tariq Cohen actually looked like a true weapon yesterday, receiving 721 and a touchdown. Was really good. He carried the ball 13 times. Jordan Howard essentially had a day off yesterday, which is always great. And then, of course, there's the defense. You get a sack out of Khalil Mack. He was in the backfield the entire day. He was unbelievable. And then Aaron Lynch gets in on it. And, you know, Robertson Harris, I thought, made a really good play to get into the backfield there. Akeem Nix had that sack before the ejection. Like, they tortured the Tampa offensive line. And we're in that backfield the entire day.
I mean, they tortured the Tampa Bay Bucs in all three phases. And I just felt like this was the week we were waiting for with the Bucs. You always knew this team was going to ride that wave and eventually come back to earth. And I believed in Fitzmagic and their ability to drive the ball down the field, because that's real. Fitzpatrick can do that. With those weapons, he can absolutely do that. The problem is that offensive line can't do it and will not do it in the long term. And I think just because you put Jameis back there, that does not help them. He's going to make more mistakes than Fitzpatrick would.
Well, and I do wish that the Tampa brain trust, if there is such a thing, I think now you see that a dirt cutter football team is not going to win you games.
Yeah.
He just is not an NFL head coach. He's a fantastic coordinator.
Yes.
He's not a head coach. And you've got to make that change. And I just don't think that team believes in Jameis Winston because he did not give them a lift. They did not see a bunch of energy. You know, DeSean Jackson is on the record as saying he doesn't enjoy catching footballs from Jameis. So I think that's a problem. But staying with the Bears, this situation in Green Bay. Now, mind you, the Packers won 22-0 yesterday over a really hapless Bills team. And your boy, Josh Allen, who absolutely wrecked you when it was Bills-Vikings, as he put his crotch on a Viking safety's face in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen was terrible yesterday. He was rated a 36. No, his QBR was 36. He was awful.
Yeah.
Two picks. He was terrible. Aaron Rodgers had a nice game. 22 of 40, 298, touchdown, interception. He was rated a 76. They won 22-0, and they were despondent after the game. Aaron Rodgers was really upset, talking about how he needs more flexibility in the offense, and he needs help from the, you know, the coaching staff to be able to leverage, you know, guys that he has, Davante Adams. Mainly, I think he's talking about Davante Adams, but he wants to be more creative in the way he gets the ball to Jimmy Graham. I think he was really frustrated that they only had one receiving touchdown and they want to be more creative. And I got to say, I totally agree. Fathead Mike McCarthy is not, in my opinion, a great head coach.
No. And I think the difference for the Packers now is you don't have guys like Jordy Nelson on your team anymore. You don't have like these great receivers out there that kind of push you over the top when your offense is just so vanilla, right? Like if you have great weapons, you can get by with a vanilla offense. All of a sudden you don't have that. You go from Jordy to, you know, Allison to Davante Adams. You know, it just, you can clearly see the downgrade. And I think Aaron Rodgers is exactly right. This is not about the fact that they won 22-0 and they're having a great year or any of that junk. This is about the fact that Aaron Rodgers knows that there's better opponents coming. And this offense is not going to get it done. And it's surprising. It's surprising that Aaron Rodgers has to come out and say this. They should already be giving him everything with the offense.
Well, that might be true. But I also think Aaron Rodgers probably is tired of hearing about Khalil Mack. And I think he's tired of hearing about that they're not in first place. And the Bears are in first place at 3-1. Granted, Green Bay is a game behind in the second half of the season. And as weeks go on, because we're, what, only a quarter of the way through the season now. Bye weeks are coming, all that good stuff. But I think Aaron Rodgers is frustrated. He's not had a great year. He was injured in week one, which obviously that's been a significant storyline in Green Bay. And they feel like they're the best team in the division, which I still think they are. Because I agree with you. I think Mitchell Trubisky was it, but who's better?
I think the Vikings on any given day can be better.
Well, they didn't show that Thursday night. They didn't show that against the Bears. Or, excuse me, against the Vikings. Good Lord. Against the Bills.
Yes.
Hello. They didn't show that against the Bills, that's for sure. They didn't show that against the Rams. The Vikings are an incredibly flawed team. And until they figured out how to cover teams in that secondary, they're not going to win games. It really is that simple. And Dalvin Cook today said that the hamstring is still a significant issue.
Yeah.
That's a freaking problem, man. Like, you have got to find a way to bring some balance to that offense. So I don't think the Vikings are one of the two best teams. I think the Bears are probably a little better than the Vikings right now. Now, when they play head-to-head, we'll get a much better idea of that. But the Vikings' schedule has not been exactly, you know, a walk through the apple orchard. You've had to play the 49ers. You won. You tied the Packers. You lost to the Bills. And now you've lost to the Rams. You've essentially gone 1-3 in your first 4 weeks. And by the way, now you got to go to Philadelphia, who's going to be pissed they lost to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And then you get some relief in the middle of October because you get the Cardinals. And then you're at the Jets. But them, hey, welcome home. By the way, Drew Brees is sitting in the living room. Like, I mean, you've got the Saints, the Lions, you're at the Bears,
but listen,
the Packers,
but
the
listen,
Patriots.
I get it. I get that. I understand. I'm not saying you're
wrong.
Their
schedules are drag.
Compare where the Vikings are at to where the Packers are at.
Okay.
So I would much rather have the Vikings offense than the Packers offense, number one.
Ooh, I totally disagree with that. I think the Packers can run the football. The Packers have three legitimate running backs. I don't know that with Dalvin Cook being injured, I don't know that the Vikings have one legitimate running back right now. Latavius Murray doesn't seem real willing to run between the tackles. You know, in that division, you gotta control the A-gap there.
I think the Vikings are just a more top-end offense. I think they're much more capable of putting up 40 than the Packers are. Being said, I think they're in a lot more high-scoring games than the Packers will be because of their lackluster defense.
I think Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones is a nice 1-2 punch. I think Geronimo Allison is emerging for the Packers. Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, Jimmy Graham, who's hit or miss. Yes, I agree with you on that. But Devontae Adams is a guy that I think is emerging as one of the best stars in the NFL. And if you want to have a Diggs versus Devontae Adams conversation, well, we can do that. Because I think, and a lot of it's probably the quarterback, but Devontae Adams is as lethal a weapon as there is in the NFL. Does Devontae Adams start on the Rams? Yes, he does.
Mm.
And he fits right in, and I think he's one of their two best receivers. The thing with the Rams is, and they're probably a bad example, but like Cooper Kupp is just a different receiver. He's a guy that can beat you every single way. Well, Devontae Adams is the exact same guy, and he's got burner speed. So I think he's just underutilized. I think you're wrong about this. I think the Vikings have weapons in the passing game. They have the best pass-catching tight end in football, in my opinion, in Kyle Rudolph. I think they have multiple wide receivers that they can use, and Diggs and Thielen, obviously, we know all about them. I think they're still looking for a number three, very clearly, but they've got to run the football. They tend to abandon the run, or at least they have in the first 4 weeks. They abandon the run when things don't go well, and now we know Dalvin's hurt, but they tend to abandon the run when things don't go well. And then your defense can't get off the field till they're tired, and your offense isn't converting first downs. You see what I'm saying? Like, you I don't know, man. I'm a real skeptic of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. I don't think the Packers will win the division, though. I don't. I think the Bears will beat them again, I think. But I could be wrong.
Well, if it goes the way it went in week one, and it clearly that will probably never happen again, the way the Packers came back and won that game, Mitchell Trubisky is not the guy we saw yesterday. That's like a heat check. He was really good. Tampa was really bad. I don't know what I make of that. I do know this, and there's probably, and I say this cautiously, there's likely no larger Chicago Bear fan than me. I love that football team. Always have, always will. I'm not a Mitchell Trubisky believer. Not from what I've seen this year. And I look at their schedule coming up. This bye week is here, I think, at a very good time. But then you got to go to Miami. And then it's the Patriots, the Jets, the Bills, the Lions. Those are good defenses. So he's going to struggle. And then when that Viking game shows up in the middle of November, that's a critical game for them. They've got, you know, Vikings, Lions, Giants, Rams. Like, their second half schedule is murderer's row. So we're going to know who he is. And we're going to get a real good dose of who Mitchell Trubisky is. And I don't tend to think we're going to like what we see. I'm curious how many people saw what Earl Thomas did yesterday. Oh, everybody saw it. Because yeah. It's one of the biggest stories in the National Football League. And that is that the Seahawks hung on somehow. And this tells you the depth of their fall. Because the Cardinals suck. They are not good.
No.
Right? They are not good.
Potentially the worst team in the league.
And in our top five, bottom five, they are the worst team in football. And they almost beat the Seahawks yesterday. almost doesn't count, right? But you had a guy in Earl Thomas that breaks his leg, gets back up on the cart to be carted off the field in an air cast and flips his coaching staff off. And I say, well, amen, Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
This is why Le'Veon Bell's not a Pittsburgh Steeler today. And I have given Le'Veon a lot of heat over this. He's given up $4 million already. Now I know why. And it's all the NFL players yesterday tweeting and talking about Earl Thomas and saying, this is why guys don't report. This is why guys don't practice. This is why guys don't like playing games on a tender. This is why guys don't like playing games on a tag.
Yeah.
Because now Earl Thomas's career is probably over. Had he stayed there and been healthy, he's likely traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That came out today that they were close. Now, instead of that, he'll go on IR, and his career's likely over. And officially, the Legion of Boom is dead, because he was the last link to that. Do you dislike what Earl Thomas did? Does it bother you he flipped them off? Where are you at with this?
I mean, I just don't think... I think that him doing that is the epitome of where they're at as a team. There is no leadership on the team. Pete Carroll is, in my opinion, has just overstayed his welcome there. I mean, I think they got to let the guy go because you're not going forward. You're not like being bad intentionally so you can draft better. You're not a Super Bowl team. You've got, you know, the guy openly disrespecting you while he's carted off in the middle of the field. Like it's just a low class organization right now. And I think this all still is coming from breaking up the Legion of Boom. It started with Sherman, and it just went downhill from there.
I think it's the way they did it.
Yeah, sure.
Without question.
Yeah.
I think Richard Sherman's one thing, but there's a lot in this conversation. Pete Carroll will be the head coach of the Seahawks, I think, as long as he wants to be. I think the news today that Paul Allen, the owner of the Blazers and the Seahawks, that his Hodgkin's lymphoma came back today. So the owner is unwell. And I think this just, it doesn't make a lot of sense to fire a quality human being like Pete Carroll right now. At the end of the season, sure, you're going to look at that. Let's say they don't win another game. Okay, well, then your hand is forced. But I think it's a lot more of a personnel issue than it is a coaching issue. Every good team, and maybe we're seeing this with our Cubs conversation, every elite team goes through a downturn. And it's how you handle that downturn at the earliest moment. You know, it's like, and I don't want to say cancer, but when you find out that you have cancer, hopefully you caught it early, right? Well, hopefully you catch the downturn of your franchise early. Otherwise, you turn into the Raiders. You turn into the Browns. You turn into, you know, the eternal cellar dwellers that the Cubs were for 100 years, because you never see it. And once you find out that you're there, somebody else has told you and you don't know how to fix it. That's always going to be the difference between elite franchises like the New England Patriots, who don't hang on to veterans, yet still find a way to go to the Super Bowl and win Super Bowls and have 5 championship rings and be all Hall of Famers, and the Cleveland Browns, who even the second incarnation of the Cleveland Browns, they can't win, and they draft a quarterback every year. And the Seattle Seahawks are right there at the tipping point.
Yeah.
You don't have weapons. Arguably, you don't have a franchise quarterback anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have a defense.
So they're already there.
Probably. And the way you handled the dismantling and the reshuffling of that organization is probably the difference. I look at Josh Rosen yesterday making his first pro start, and he looked pretty good. He looked pretty good. Talk about a guy without weapons. That guy doesn't have a wide receiver. Larry Fitzgerald, bless him, is not a guy that's an elite number one wide receiver. Ricky Seals-Jones should not be leading your team in receiving yesterday. You know, you had 15 passes completed. 3 to David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, 4 to Christian Kirk. Chad Williams, the second-year guy, catches a touchdown. Like, I mean, you just don't have talent on this team.
Yeah.
And the talent you do have is underutilized because of the offensive line.
Yep.
So the Arizona Cardinals are also that team that's perennially awful because they don't understand where they are as a football team. They thought they were a Super Bowl contender at the beginning of the last three seasons. So you hand Tyrann Mathieu a huge payday, which we said when they paid him, well, this is a bad decision.
I remember the moment.
Mistake. Yeah.
And everybody called us idiots.
Yeah. You guys are just being haters. Well, he's actually now just an average player for the Houston Texans.
I would say he's not even a name right now.
He's not. He's not a name. Anyway, my point is Pete Carroll should be the head coach of the Seahawks as long as he wants to be. But somebody's got to make a decision on Russell Wilson, and you've got to restock that defense with talent. And that's not going to be easy to do because it's what you always say. You can't finish, you know, eighth in the Western Conference and expect to be, you know, replenishing your talent.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to suck, suck badly.
Just tank. Own it. Do what tank. The Lakers did. Own it.
Tank. That's the right thing to do. And if you are just going to finish in the, you know, the middle of the pack, you're going to suck for a long time. It's going to be a decade.
Yeah.
You're going to give away 10 years. You're going to waste your quarterback. You're going to waste your best players. You know, you're going to waste Joe Staley in San Francisco. You're going to waste Joe Thomas in Cleveland, like the best tackles, like you name it, you're going to waste those guys.
Yeah.
So to me, that's where the Seahawks are. Chargers and 49ers. Chargers won that game with defense. Derwin James, absolutely legit. Great pick out of Florida State. Love that kid. You know what stood out to me most in that game? All the 49er fans in Los Angeles. It was amazing to see how many 49er fans were at that game.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, this is a legitimate question. Are there any Charger fans outside of Boltman? Are there any Charger fans left in this country? Whether that's L.A. or San Diego? I
think there's a fair bit in San Diego, but I don't think there's much in L.A.
That was embarrassing.
Why would
yesterday.
You be a Charger fan when you can be a Ram fan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And this is not, a lot of people keep saying, oh, once they get into the new stadium, once again in the new stadium, be just like the Jets.
Once they get in a new stadium, what? The Jets haven't been anything.
It's not like the Jets.
Yeah.
No. It's not like the Jets, man. This is a weird situation that's going on there. And I don't know how you explain that. And you want to talk about wasting guys. I look at somebody like Phillip Rivers, and I think Phil is an absolute legend and a Hall of Famer.
Wasted.
Absolutely wasted. I mean, like tragically wasted, because he is an elite quarterback. And I don't know that anybody thinks that, but they win yesterday. And he throws the ball 39 times, 3 touchdowns, an interception, 97.2. And they have a really good running back. Do you know the starting running back for the Los Angeles, not San Diego, but everybody hates me, Chargers?
Melvin Gordon.
Good running back. But I don't think...
Arguably just as good as Todd Gurley, and nobody knows him.
Nobody knows him. I think he's emerging, but nobody knows him. You know, you look at their wide receivers. Who's their best receiver right now on that team? If you had to pick one guy to throw the football to with the game
Melvin.
On the line,
Melvin Gordon
is their best receiver.
I mean, I have Keenan Allen on my fantasy team, but Melvin Gordon's their guy.
And then you have Mike Williams, but you have Antonio Gates catching a touchdown yesterday.
The thing about Melvin Gordon is this guy is what David Johnson used to be. Melvin Gordon is a guy who will just run your ass over. He can beat you with the speed. But the difference between him and Todd Gurley is Melvin Gordon can run you over. Todd wants to run around you. And that's the biggest difference. And I think if they were any kind of an elite organization, which in my opinion they're not, but if they were an elite organization, they've got tools there to win. They're just not using them.
Yeah, and then there's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I don't even know what to say about this team. Reports out today say that Le'Veon Bell will report after the bye week in 2 weeks. And they need him because they are in a bad way. They lost last night on Sunday Night Football to the Baltimore Ravens. They're 1-2-1. They're 0-2 at home. Ben Roethlisberger just completely contained. They ran for 19 total yards last night. 19 total yards. And you have awesome wide receivers. I think one of the truly emerging tight ends in this league is former 49er, now Pittsburgh Steeler, Vance McDonald, who's become a legitimate weapon. But the interesting thing about the Steelers, and you're probably going to hate this, I think Antonio Brown's a problem for that football team. Because if you don't throw him the ball, he bitches and moans about that. And I think they have changed the way they run their routes, and I don't like it. I think Juju Smith-Schuster deserves more touches, and he's not going to get them as long as Antonio Brown's on that team.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. Antonio's always going to be the diva, but I think Juju is barking up his tree, man. Juju is doing everything he can do, and I think he's earning those touches. You're right. The problem comes in when you've got this Le'Veon thing on the side, and you had James Conner had a great week last week, but not so great this week. You know, you had this big rivalry game, Steelers-Ravens, yeah. And you didn't perform, and now you're in a situation where the public is like, oh, well, you guys need Le'Veon, so he's coming back, which isn't the situation at all. He's only coming back so he can get paid. You know, so I don't know. I just think that Antonio Brown is a distraction on the field for the defense, and that means that you have to utilize Juju.
Well, and I thought Colin Cowherd made a great point today. He was talking about the fact their numbers were almost identical. The only difference is AB has the touchdown.
Mm.
But it's the quality of the route. It's the quality of the opportunity.
It's the little things.
Yeah, that gets you to where you are. And AB had 5 catches. Juju had 4. They both had 11 targets. You look at Juju Smith-Schuster, he's not getting big-time red zone opportunities. They're not throwing him go routes. You know, he has to work a lot harder for his catches, and I think that's absolutely accurate.
Yeah.
Now, Le'Veon Bell, I would trade him. I would never allow Le'Veon Bell back in my locker room. And I say that because of the things he's said and the things his teammates have said about him. The fact that he is not going to report until the bye week, I don't understand that idea. If you're Le'Veon Bell, you are clearly missed in this offense. No offense, James Conner, but no. You are clearly missed in this offense. This is a guy that's absolutely a weapon. You can throw him the ball. You can hand him the ball. He's an excellent blocker and picks up the blitz very well. I don't know why if he does not come back now. And I don't necessarily buy the swoop in and rescue the Steelers argument for Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
But one, you're giving away money. And here's the difference with a guy like Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is giving away $834,000 a week.
More than Connor makes in a year.
That's incredible. He's forfeited, by the way. He's forfeited $3.8 million. He's forfeited more this year than the top 3 running backs behind him on the roster will make the entire year combined.
Yeah.
He's given away a crap ton of money. Granted, he hasn't gotten hurt or broken a leg, but he's also not helping a team. And I think this is a bad look for him. Watching this team crumble around him, and he's worried about leverage. I don't understand that. By the way, if they trade him, Adam Schefter reported today that they still are holding steadfast to a second-round pick and a good player. I don't know anybody that's got that. Because if you think about teams in this league that really could use a Le'Veon Bell, the New York Jets are a perfect fit. A, I'm not trading him in the conference. Screw you. There's not a chance in the world I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers sending Le'Veon Bell to the New York Jets.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But if you think about where there are fits for him around the NFL, I actually don't think there's a whole ton of teams that A, have the space, or B, really need Le'Veon Bell. And I'll just go to the NFC because I still don't believe that they'll trade him to the Jets or the Patriots, which are two teams everybody's talking about. Like, the Packers have a glut of running backs. I think they'd love to have him. I don't know who they give up to get him. The Vikings, I think the Vikings are a perfect fit for Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, they are.
Right? You could absolutely use him there. New Orleans, Carolina, Tampa could absolutely use him.
He'd be an outstanding fit for New Orleans, in my opinion, because you've got Drew Brees.
Kamara?
One of the... Well, yeah, for sure. No, I get it. But Le'Veon Bell is better than Kamara. I don't even... I just think that. That's what I believe.
But, okay, so let's use the Saints real quick. If you trade Alvin Kamara to get Le'Veon Bell and you give up a second-round pick, you're getting him for what? 9 weeks? And you gave up Kamara and a second-round pick. I'm not doing that.
So then who would do it then?
if you want just a second round pick and I can negotiate with him and sign him to an extension, okay, great. Maybe I'll do that. Here's the problem. He's going to make $18 million a year. There's like a handful of teams. You know who desperately needs him? The Atlanta Falcons. Desperately need Le'Veon Bell. That's who they need. Because, you know, Freeman's hurt, and I think they're desperate for a guy like that. He'd be a great fit there. Other than that, in the NFC, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that have the space or the talent to put him in there. Look at that. Look at that loss yesterday by the Atlanta Falcons to the Cincinnati Bengals. Tevin Coleman is your leading running back. By the way, he's a free agent after this year, right? So Devontae Freeman's out. Tevin Coleman's your number one, and he's a decent back. How did you blow that game? You blew it with defense. You had a broken coverage at the end of the game on, of all people on Cincinnati, A.J. Green runs through a zone coverage that was later, they said, it was supposed to be man on A.J. Green. And they just let him go. Runs an out pattern to the goal line. Perfect throw. Touchdown. Your boy Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bengals in Atlanta, by the way, beat the Falcons. Like, I am amazed by that. Even to the point where I say to myself, Matt Ryan threw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, no picks. And you lost? Like, what's wrong with that team? There's just something wrong there. Mm-hmm. Like Julio Jones again yesterday, 173 yards, no touchdowns. Like, how is that even possible? Calvin Ridley gets 2 scores. You can't find a touchdown for Julio Jones? Like, you don't have a design in your offense on a play? And again, in the red zone, you don't have a design in your offense? But I can get Logan Paulson a touchdown? There's something wrong with that team. I don't know what it is. I'm not saying that I'm a football coach, but good Lord, I think I could find a way to get Julio Jones a touchdown.
You would think, but no, they can't.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Matt Ryan's fault.
No, Matt Ryan played well yesterday. I think those are the biggest storylines in the NFL. What else stands out to you?
I just think overall there's a lot of teams who are in this gray area, if you will. Like, the Steelers need to get past this Le'Veon Bell saga. Right, like the Falcons need to find somebody who can actually run the football so that they can have a balanced attack. The Vikings, perfect example. We kind of disagree but also agree at the same time. Like, yeah, they need more. They need more balance on both sides of the ball. They could use him, but they're not going to go and get him, I don't think. I mean, I just don't see that happening.
Like, how about the Raiders beating the Browns yesterday?
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch ran their ass over.
Chucky got his first win back with the Raiders. They won it on a field goal in overtime. And I was actually impressed. Yep, Baker threw 2 terrible interceptions. I agree with that. But I thought he stood toe-to-toe with Derek Carr, and then Derek Carr lit it up in the fourth quarter, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's what really made the difference there. But I think Nick Chubb is a breakout star for them. And the other thing that really stands out to me about the Cleveland Browns with Baker as their quarterback is that he loves Jarvis Landry. The two guys he really likes throwing the football to are Jarvis Landry and David Njoku. You can just see he looks for those guys. I think Rashard Higgins is good and all that, but those two guys, he seems to be really tight with them. But Marshawn Lynch was the Marshawn Lynch of old yesterday. And he looked like a guy to me that was back in the flow.
Well, it just happens at a certain point in the game. He'll just have one run where he runs somebody over, and all of a sudden, the Skittles saga is back. Like, it just happens.
They're so much better when Marshawn Lynch is going, and get the ball to Amari Cooper and Jared Cook. Like, and this is what John Gruden's good at. John Gruden is good at the obvious. And if he will just do the little things to get Lynch involved and Cooper, Cook, they even threw the ball to Martavis Bryant. How about Jordy Nelson getting that touchdown? Like, I mean, John, for better or for worse, John Gruden, they're improving offensively.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they matriculate through the schedule.
Big word for you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they develop through the schedule.
Yeah.
Going down the stretch, but that was a fun game to watch yesterday.
Yeah.
And what did you say about the Browns after they lost?
Typical Browns fashion, bro.
They got to learn how to win.
Yeah, learn how to close
a
game, bro.
Like, you got to learn
how
to win.
Learn how to close a game, you know? I like Baker a lot. I'm definitely buying Baker. Yeah, he made two mistakes, but at the end of the day, they like him. The guys believe in him, and that includes guys like Landry. And I think when you believe in a quarterback, there's no telling how far you can go.
By the way, one college football story, because it's BYU, and we had a huge discussion about this. I watched certain parts of the BYU game over today.
Very disappointing.
But I felt like the thing that stood out to me was they never quit.
Well, they shouldn't quit. It's a Kalani team. But this is the biggest thing for me now for Kalani. You're inconsistent now. Right after this loss, you're inconsistent a little bit,
dude. You're falling into Cougar Nation.
No, I'm not falling into Cougar Nation.
You kind of are, though.
No, I'm not. You cannot go out to Wisconsin and beat them the way you did and put up nothing against Washington.
Here's the difference: Washington's elite. Their defense, and I said this about Member Kervin, and he balled his ass off. The Washington Huskies on defense are, I think, a top five defense in this country, at least that I've seen. And I still maintain that the Utes, who, you want to talk about disappointing, losing to Washington State, that was just nut-busting. But the Washington Huskies, second or third best defense I've seen, and I've seen them three times now this season, that's a really good defense. And they're really balanced on offense. That's what we saw. And I think it's very difficult to go to Seattle and play in that atmosphere and expect to win when you are athletically just not in the same league and you don't have depth.
Put points on the board. That's it. That's all. You don't have to win the game.
They've done that against everybody else except this. They'll struggle against the Utes at the end of the year.
I'm sure they will, but the point was they weren't supposed to win the game, right? Like, yeah. Nobody had them winning the game. In my opinion, I have not read anything about Cougar Nation and all that junk.
Cougs.
This is what I think about the game. You're inconsistent now. You cannot go on the road in a hostile environment and win a game like that and then go to Seattle in a game you should lose. There's no way you should get shut out. Like, that can't happen. I'm just saying, put up a field goal. Put up 7 points. That's it. I'm not asking you to go out and put 40 points on them, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You should be able to move the ball to the 35-yard line and kick a field goal.
Well, I not in Seattle, you shouldn't. I think if you are, I want to emphasize this. The BYU Cougars are not athletically talented. They have some athletes. Squally Canada is a phenomenal athlete. Corbin Kafusi is a phenomenal athlete. But you don't have speed. They're not fast. What do you know about Washington's defense? They're really fast, and they're really physical. They're just in a different league. Now, Wisconsin's a Big Ten team, a second-tier Big Ten team, who's not blazing fast. They're just physical. If BYU can stand in front of you, they're going to kick your ass. That was the difference at Washington. We'll talk a lot more BYU tomorrow. But I also want to update you on the latest Brett Kavanaugh situation. By the way, did you see the Saturday Night Live skit with Matt Damon?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It's on my Facebook page, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, on Facebook. I do pretty much all politics on my Facebook page, so if you don't like politics, don't go there. Anyway, it was amazing. But today, it turns out that people were texting with Brett Kavanaugh and his staff. Not just any people, Brett Kavanaugh's college classmates and the people he said were his friends, all those guys and girls he named off, the Jimmy and Tommy and PJ and Squee and the hell names their kids Squee. Anyway, the point is, they've been texting with all those people. Kavanaugh and his staff were reportedly sending text messages to his former classmates to underplay the allegations that he exposed himself during a party at Yale. That's amazing. A receipt of one of the text messages forwarded to the FBI because, quote, they merit investigation by the FBI and the Senate, said one of Kavanaugh's former classmates and friends. I'm telling you, this guy's in big trouble.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
He
is no question.
Big, big trouble. And here's the bigger problem. Kavanaugh previously testified that he had not discussed or heard of Ramirez's allegations put out in the New Yorker magazine, but Kavanaugh later appeared to contradict himself by saying he had heard that one of the accusers was calling around to classmates trying to see if they remembered it. So wait, you did hear about it or you didn't hear about it?
Mm-hmm.
My question is twofold on Brett Kavanaugh, real quick. How can a guy who's acted like he acted in during this testimony, and now we know because more Yale classmates are on the record saying he was a fall down, pass out, drunk guy at Yale. How can you trust a guy who just hasn't been honest to be a Supreme Court justice? Because he also said, well, all four people who were at the party have said it didn't happen, which is a complete lie.
Yeah.
He's one of the four people at the party. He says it didn't happen. The Dr. Ford and her friend, Dr. Ford said it happened. Okay, so now one person said it didn't happen. The other said it did. The female friend of Dr. Ford's, who Kavanaugh has said, well, even your best friend said it didn't happen. That's not what she said. She said, well, I don't know about it because I was downstairs. And if you're downstairs at this gathering, you wouldn't have known about it. And who's the fourth guy? Well, this guy, Judge, who's alleged to have taken part in the assault.
Yeah.
So he's been dishonest.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, the point is, I just don't see how a guy who acted the way he acted and conducted himself that way during these FBI hearings or these Senate hearings and this FBI investigation, how can you put this guy in the Supreme Court?
Yeah, and by the way, it should be said that if you're even in the conversation of having done something like this, you're not a good human being.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, and I think a lot of this is why his wife looked absolutely miserable sitting behind him. Like, it is just awkward. Oh, the other thing I thought was interesting was that his refusal to acknowledge that they needed an FBI investigation led a bunch of people to check his calendar. Because remember, he said, well, I don't remember a party like that. On the calendar that he says he kept, there's a description of, I think it's six people's name, drinking brewskis at a guy's house. Like, that's the exact event she's describing. The whole thing's just weird.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway.
By the way, we're friends with Canada again. Do you hear about that? Donald Trump and, you know, Justin Trudeau, they got together on a NAFTA agreement.
Huh.
Aren't you excited about that?
He's actually doing something good.
We can keep watching hockey now.
Yeah. Yeah, go Oilers.
You don't want to talk about this.
Did you
say go Oilers? Why would you say go Oilers? What about the Maple Leafs? Oilers is the Canadian team that you pulled. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Can you name another Canadian hockey team?
Yeah, the Maple Leafs.
Canadians? Canucks? No, the Canucks are terrible. We Senators. Don't like the Canucks. Senators, nicely done. What about the Buffalo Sabres? They're a Canadian team.
Right.
Tomorrow on the show, lots more BYU, lots of college football, including my R&W Notre Dame. How about that win? And I still hate Urban Meyer. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. Are you ready to say goodbye, Jake?
Goodbye, Jake.